Let's bring Joe into this conversation a little bit. Joe, why wouldn't Michigan at least step up into the range of the pay scale for Les Miles? I mean, are they still in the dark ages? Are they that arrogant that they, to a degree, they are.
They say we're Michigan.
Yeah, but they missed out on their guy.
I was told, Frank, quite a while back that one of the big issues, if Les Miles was going to go, was going to be that Michigan was not going to pay him the kind of money he could make somewhere else, that they just will not and do not. And so when I heard that, I said, well, you know, they were right. You know, that in the end, Michigan was not willing to step up and pay that kind of money for their football coach, period. And I think most Michigan people knew that. Now,
how do you feel about the Herb Street deal as far as him, as far as the protocol or just the way – you know, the timeline where you tell someone, like he tells the producers to put it, I mean,
Frank, it sounds simple, but to put it on the scroll,
I mean, does he have to ghost to someone, Joe, and say, listen, I'm got this solid information, put it out there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that he had to go forward and say, look, I'm confident in my source that this is the situation. Now, Mark was probably not too far off when you say what was true at 10 o'clock might not be true at 2 o'clock.
And at ESPN, Joe, they have an ironclad rule that you need two sources on a story.
Yeah, well, then maybe Herb Street was counting himself as one.
Maybe he was.
I don't know. It's amazingly difficult to chase those things down now with so many variables, as you mentioned, in the internet age and all that, that you know, a source may tell you one thing, and then somebody on another side's hearing something else. And it's—I agree with you, Frank. When you go with something, you better be doggone sure that you've got something to back it up. And apparently, this time, Kirk's sources were not quite what he thought.
Well, on Saturday, what was true at 10 o'clock was still true at 2 o'clock as Vanderbilt played Georgia Tech, and the Commodores keep their record perfect with an impressive win that. And a game that really wasn't as close as the final score was.
No, they played 35 good minutes. The last four or five were a bit of a disappointment. And that's one of those, you look at the final margin of 92-79 and go, well, that's a nice win. But if you were at the game, you know that it really wasn't that close. It was a 28-point lead on a couple of occasions and shot the ball very well. You knew when you looked at Tech's numbers and the way they played the game, that if you were patient and smart with the basketball, you would get the shots you wanted. And Tech plays, they like to press, and Vanderbilt wants you to press because if Vanderbilt, with all the ball handlers, can beat that pressure, they're going to get great looks. And that's what happened. And they ran out to a 20-point lead. And I was always, you wondered, because they'd had big leads on a number of occasions this year and lost those leads and had to hang on at the end. Well, they never really were in that situation. And that was one of the good things that came out of the game. And they knew it. They knew that they were developing a reputation of building leads and not hanging on to them. So I think they answered that call pretty well. And now another big game coming up on Wednesday night against Wake Forest. But I think Kevin really liked the defensive intensity they played with. You know, Anthony Morrow came in averaging almost 19 a game and didn't score in the first half. Shane Foster barely let him get his hands on the ball. And Morrow ended up with, I think, a dozen points, and they all came basically in the last few minutes when it was well decided.
Joe, I'm really impressed with Metcalf. He seems just a lot more confident on the offensive end and, you know, really the difference maker that Kevin hoped he'd be a year ago. I think he will be coming off the bench this year.
I think he really is very comfortable in the role of having A.J. Ogilvie there as kind of the main post player and Allen as a complementary player to him. He doesn't feel like he has to throw the team on his back and be all of the production inside. He's got AJ there, and they just play as a good complement for each other. He does seem very comfortable with it. He's been capable of this all along. I saw him after the game when I was walking down to do the post-game interview with Kevin, and he walked out of the locker room, and he saw I had a stat sheet in my hand, and he said, "How many free throws did I miss?" And I said, "You were 5 for 8," and he shook his head. You know, because he prides himself on being a pretty good free throw shooter. So I like the way he's playing right now, and he's a very solid role to help out.
Well, those pointers I gave him in the media 3-point contest a couple years ago really helped.
That's why I brought that up, Kevin. Uh-huh. I knew that you were a very influential part of his development.
Right. Joe, talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, guys.